Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, March 21st, and from what I understand, we talked yesterday. I thought it was March 20th or the 21st, and Tori said it was the 21st. So today, the first day of spring, folks. Tori is out today, but I'm joined by a new friend of the show. She was on the show Friday, right?
That's right.
And I have Cameron Kelly in front of me. Welcome to the show, Cameron.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yes. For those of you who didn't listen, you should tune in to our last Friday show. We had a lot of fun. You came on the show and stuff.
We had a blast.
Got to know you a little bit. And actually, Tori and I met you last week at Flappers, which is a comedy club here in Burbank.
That's right.
And what were you doing there?
What was I doing there? I was doing stand-up, as Tori was. We were in the same show, and that you came to see.
Right.
We were at Flappers in the Yoo-Hoo room doing a few sets, and it was a fun night. It was a good night.
It was a small room, though, right?
It's a small room, and it's kind of a funky room sometimes. But
right? Yeah. Because I think you have to get like the right mood and the right energy in the room, right?
Oh, yes.
And I got to tell you that... I went with Casey and we watched the show, and I think the problem was the beginning of it. I think if you don't, you know, what happened is when you have a not funny host, I think what happened to us is that we were at a point of like, make us laugh now. We were expecting every comedian to come up to really blow us away, and they didn't.
Yeah, you know, I hope that host is not listening, but it has a huge effect on the show.
It really does.
When the first person who comes out doesn't kind of grab you.
Right.
And then you've got an audience who's kind of sitting with their arms crossed, you know, prove to me that you're a comedian because I paid for a ticket. So let's get it going.
Exactly.
You know, so it's sort of
expectations are high now.
The expectations are high, and if the audience is in a mood... you know, that's one that's sort of contrarian to,
right.
to being...
But how can the audience be in the mood? I mean, you have like 30, 40 people there maybe, right?
Yeah. You think that much? Yeah. I thought less maybe, but...
Maybe about 30 or so.
Yeah.
Because there were a few people. Easily 30, yeah.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like it. I know, it felt like five people in there.
Well, it certainly does when no one's laughing.
Right? Yeah. And it's hard. It's hard. And that's why we were asking you before... I mean, this is a difficult thing. Why did you pick this? I mean, you know, it's like the chance for failing is pretty big,
so high.
Right?
Yeah, I know. But it is in everything I've chosen, in acting, in comedy. So, maybe I just like to fail or hope to fail.
No, I don't think so. I think you like to take challenges and go after the things you want, right?
That's right. And
who likes to fail?
Not me. But the beauty of being a creative person, I think, without a 9-to-5 job, is that I do a bunch of different jobs, and it's not sort of restricted to just acting anymore. I'm not just an actress. I can also be a comedian, and I can go do stand-up, and I can come be on a radio show, and I can be a model or a dancer or a singer or whatever, and people have sort of people are more well-rounded, I think.
Right, yeah.
And that's it.
We discussed you're the creative type. I mean, you couldn't sit in an office from 9 to 5, right?
No, I don't think I could.
Yeah, so you have a lot of different things that you like to do. I'm like that too, you know? Otherwise, you get bored, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's too much of the same thing.
Too much of the same thing. I was going to ask you, actually, because I was so fascinated. I mean, Friday was the first time that I'd ever done radio of any kind, and I came away just so in love with the medium. And I'd never done it, and I was so excited, and you guys were perfectly gracious and wonderful, made it so easy. How did you get into radio? How did this all start? And how did you meet Tori?
Let's see. Well, let's start with Tori because it's a shorter story.
Okay.
So, Tori and I, pretty much the way I found most of my former co-hosts, and that's through Craigslist.
You're kidding.
So I would put an ad, and I was looking for someone, and it's always a hard search, you know? I mean, it's not easy finding someone that will connect. You have to have chemistry, you know? Yeah. And many people just don't get it, you know, or they think they're good on radio, and then they come on here, and they're not, you know? But sometimes it takes me a while to find out, and after I ask them to come on the show, then I find out, well, wait a minute, maybe they're not really good for this.
Yeah.
So, but for the most part, been very successful with the show and the co-hosts. And it's cool because every time there's a new co-host, the show takes a different direction, a different tone, things like that, you know. So,
yeah.
I mean, God, this show used to be very salacious early on in its life,
really?
You know, because I had some co-hosts that were wild. But like now with Tori, for example, she's a married woman, you know. She comes from a home of established people and things like that. So so the show doesn't go in that direction as much. But yeah, you know, so it's always been different. Sometimes, I mean, I had one co-host that was like really confrontational, you know.
Wow.
And she would always like always argue with me about everything. And I'm like, why are we arguing like this, you know, like a husband and wife or something, you know. I said, enough of that, you know. So anyway, so Tori, the funny thing was is that I had like the final three. And then Tori's like, well, I can't come. I wanted to make a decision by the weekend. She couldn't come. She says, I can come Monday. I said, okay, I'll wait one more day, right? Mm-hmm. Just to give her another chance. Because I already invited her, you know?
Right.
I didn't want to. Imagine inviting someone for an interview or an audition, and then you tell them, don't come. You know, we already picked someone.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then she walked in, and we connected.
Which, by the way, has happened.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'm wow. sure to every actress. Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Audition gets know. Canceled this, on your way there.
Yeah, I mean, that's terrible, you know?
It
I mean, it's
terrible.
Like, how is that supposed to make you feel about yourself? But
yeah.
But it's not you. It's the way people run their businesses, you know? Because, like, if you fell in my net, I wouldn't do this, you know?
Right.
I mean, I try to at least be decent to people. You know, I mean, I may not return ones that I don't pick, but who's got time, you know, to call everybody and say, you know, you didn't qualify, you know?
It's not going to be you.
Exactly. So you contact the ones that you do. So, I mean, I understand it from the perspective of the performer that they'd like someone to call them. But but I can understand if someone promised you something and you were really close to it.
Right. If you were really close, if it came down to you and one other person.
Right.
Maybe.
Exactly. Then they owe it to you, I think.
Right. Right.
But otherwise, so that's pretty much the way I practice. And it helps with people, you know, with relationships and stuff. But many people, they're in positions here in this town that they're not really the owners or the CEOs or anything. They're just like, they work for the company and they try to take advantage of their position, you know. But they don't care, what am I projecting on this prospective applicant or something, you know. They're like, you know, shit, they're working for me, you know. I don't give a shit about them. There's a million of them. And there's attitude like that here, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't subscribe to that. So maybe that's the key for longevity, you know. It's like you got to treat people like human beings,
yes,
you know.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. So I used to be an introvert, although I always enjoyed people. But
really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I can't believe that.
But I love to be, I love working with people. And so you asked me about the station.
Yeah, so how long have you
so
have been
with
here?
The station, we just celebrated 9 years. We started in 2008.
Congratulations, wow.
This thing took me exactly 30 days from concept to actually launching.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
No, really. So it was like over Christmas, I went to visit some friends. They had an internet station, but it was totally different. There's no like physical location.
Right.
So like the way people do like podcasts.
Sort of from their home.
Yeah, people would call from home to that station by phone. I mean, this was before 2008, and so the idea of internet radio was not new in 2008, but to me it was like, you know, and their station was more like everything that's not mainstream they do. So UFOs, psychics, you know,
wow.
Everything, conspiracies, shit like that. And I thought I thought, you know, if I can actually broadcast without having to buy a radio station with an antenna and get an FCC license,
right?
Why don't I do it with like mainstream shows, like shows that I would want to listen to?
Right.
Fun that people would just come on and start talking. So I thought, what the hell, you know? So I went, bought a little equipment, put an ad on Facebook, and a couple of women responded, but so we started practicing in my kitchen table, right? And then I decided I'm gonna get and I thought, gee, I like this, I could really get into this. So I got a place downtown on the 36th floor in a high rise downtown, because I wanted to be on top of the world, right?
Wow.
So that was fun. I mean, we were so high up there that the helicopters were flying below us. So that was fun to do a show from there, but it became small real fast, so we moved out here to the Valley. Bigger studios. We added another studio.
This is really a beautiful place.
Yeah, and video studio now, you know.
Wish you guys on the radio could see it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, I mean, and that's the thing that means the most to me. I mean, at first I said, this station is never going to be, I'm never going to compromise it for financial decisions, you know. Mm-hmm. So in other words, it's always going to stay, there's always going to be an integrity to it, and let people say whatever they want, you know. That's our slogan, you know, we say what we want.
Yeah.
That's what I envisioned, and that's how my first show was. And God knows, I mean, we could cuss, and we did a lot. But it was wild then, but it was the Wild West. And I think also I matured and got a little older, and the people around us did. So we sort of got into more relevant things, let's say. But it was always fun. I mean, I always invite people to go to my page. You can just see the picture of me and Tori on there. And if you scroll a little bit, like right next to my picture, it says Sam's past shows, and if you click on that one, you'll see like all the past iterations of the show with a different co-host, and it goes back 9 years. Sometimes I listen to it, I go, wow, it was cool then and it's cool now, you know.
It's kind of a nice thing to have some permanence here, you know. I mean, obviously
I've never done anything this long. I've never lasted this long with anything.
Well, there you go. So, and maybe, you know? Maybe it's because you're alternating co-hosts as you go, but it's kind of nice to leave your mark in a way, you know? We won't be here forever, and to have left behind a number, 6-9 years
that's
worth
true,
of
right?
shows and thoughts, and that your family can listen to, and that, you know.
That's the cool thing about being a performer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're always going to have your pictures and your film and stuff out there, you know? So you're leaving something behind you. You're not like completely anonymous.
Right, I know. I think
obviously,
that's
you've given that some thought, right?
That's what we're all after is not being anonymous.
Having a legacy or
something. Yeah, leaving something behind. That's worth something, you know. Either when, and it's already worth something if it's made someone laugh, you know,
right.
or if it's taught someone something. So it can be very small, but I like that. I like that about radio. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
How did you get into radio in the first place?
Well, so
have you always wanted to?
No, I was never on radio before. I just always wanted my own show. That idea came up, and I put one and one together, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to start my own radio show, and that's what I did. So that's
there
what we have, LA Talk Radio. I started it with a different name, but then I wanted something unique, and I was lucky enough to find LATalkRadio.com. So I got that one.
That's great. I'm surprised,
you know,
that wasn't already.
I know. Well, you know, that's because it's important to get somewhere first, you know, or early on. And like they say, the early bird gets the worm, right?
Yeah.
Because once, and that's the thing with social networks. If you noticed, if you joined late, then you're not doing as well as people that were there early, you know, because, and I'm not talking about big celebrities and everything that can get like a million followers overnight.
Right.
But, you know, anonymous people that somehow have gained followers, it takes a while and it's hard work, you know.
Yeah, it is. Do you have trouble with social media stuff?
No, the only problem I have is I don't have enough time to cover all of them, you know.
Yeah.
So,
so many of them.
Yeah, so we were looking for a couple people, but tried, but... It's hard to find good help these days. That's all I can tell you, man. It really is. You know, there's a lot of good people out there, but how do you find them? You know, they're probably all taken.
They're probably all 16.
Yeah, right. So, a little bit about you. Were you born? Where did you grow up?
So I was born. Sorry, this will be repetitive for anyone who tuned in on Friday, but
that's okay. I'm sure many people. Yeah.
I was born in the Washington D.C. area, like Tori actually, and I grew up in Maryland. I actually grew up mostly overseas. Growing up, we moved to France when I was one, and lived in Paris for 4 years, and then moved back to D.C. where I stayed in the French Lycée, the French International School, and then down to Chile for 3 years, and we lived in Santiago for 3 years, and then moved back to D.C.
Oh, wow.
We just kind of keep coming back to D.C.
Right.
And then I went to high school in D.C. and then moved out here for college. I went to Chapman University in Orange County.
Oh, wow. How cool is that?
Yeah, it was great.
So, I mean, have you been to California before you moved here?
Yes, actually. It's funny. My parents are originally from this area. They grew up here and met at UCLA. My funny story. My dad was actually my mom's professor.
Really?
Yes, very scandalous.
Oh.
So she needed an A. And
but this was
a
college, right? So she was of age.
Yes, she was of age. And honestly, to be honest, he was, I think, more of a TA. Like, he had just graduated from UCLA and then was sort of, I don't know, because the age gap is not humongous.
Exactly. In college, it's not the same as a teacher and a student.
Yeah, exactly. It's not quite the scandal that it sounds like. But but anyway.
But how does something like that happen? I mean, who makes the move, you know? If I was a teacher, I'd be afraid to make a move like that.
Yeah, it must have been her. I've never actually asked them the specifics of the
But maybe it's too personal, you know? I know that your mom was listening the other day, and I realized, oh, boy, I was asking Cameron maybe too personal. Questions, but obviously you don't have to answer anything. Just give me the throat slashing mark.
Right, and, right.
But
I just mouth mom to you.
Right,
mom listening.
But no, I committed to not go too personal with you. So that's fine. You know, I mean, it'll stay between your mom and your dad how they met and all that stuff.
Yeah,
they can write a book or make a movie one day.
Yeah, they'll come in here and tell their story if they want.
Exactly. Yeah. So, do they live here now or in back? Where do they live now?
So my mom and brother, my younger brother Evan, live in Orange County.
So, kind of here.
They've since kind of moved here.
Awesome.
And my dad does too, sort of, but he still works in D.C.
Like back and forth and stuff.
So back and forth,
oh,
yeah.
Wow,
and
wow,
he
wow.
travels constantly, so I'm not even sure where in the world he is currently. Where is he? I know he's in a hotel somewhere.
That's okay. We don't have to get into the details there.
Yeah.
But, wow. So that's pretty cool. Now, so you went to college. What did you go for? Like,
arts? I was a screen acting major.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you know what you wanted to do, pretty much.
I knew. I've known. Yeah.
And what did you always consider yourself funny? Like funny enough to be in comedy and on?
Yeah. Well, have I always been funny? My mom tells me that I wasn't a funny kid and that she made me funny.
Good.
But yeah, she really takes credit for that. Fully. My mom's such a she's hysterical. I mean,
she's funny, right?
The funniest woman that I know. But she claims that I was born just boring as a doorknob, and then her influence has made me, you know, the comedian.
Well, maybe that's what it is, but I mean, that's what parents do, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what parents do, for crying out loud.
That's
you know?
True. That's
so
true.
You hope that a lot will rub off on your kids.
yeah.
Not always the case, you know, but you try, you know.
Yeah. Well, they say you become your parents. So so here I go. Which would honestly be a fine thing. My parents are both brilliantly smart. And great people. And
that's awesome.
You know, a little nuts, but you need that.
Exactly. And I think we all pick the qualities in our parents that we want to identify with, you know. So
you may
give them a little break about things that are not so great about them. But the things that are good, like the character that they give you, you know, the moral support, the everything, the support, you know.
You know, I've wondered about that. If you if you're conscious about it, do you inherit all of it, the, you know, the good and the bad? Because I know that I've inherited, obviously, some good, all good. But I realized in my adult life, which I didn't used to possess this at all, and I know this,
right?
Something that my mom did when I was growing up. And it's a fear, not a fear, but a nervousness about entertaining people.
Right.
And I have it now, too.
Yeah.
And I get very, adrenaline really wrapped around. Yeah, and I'm cleaning, and I'm cooking, and I'm preparing, and I start being mean to the people I love, like, that are closest. It's like my boyfriend and my best friend just get the brunt of it, of just me just yell, like, fluff the pillows! And I'm just going crazy. And I remember my mom doing this growing up and thinking, what is she so wrapped, you know, what is she so nervous about? And it's now, and it's happening to me. So
really?
I feel like I'm morphing.
Really? So, I mean, would you go as far as to say it's like a manic kind of a thing?
Yeah, well, really? I think my boyfriend would.
That's what it sounded like. Yeah. You know?
it's not the most flattering depiction, but it is. It's just a it's
no,
just
because
a wanting so much to entertain properly and for people to come in and have fun and be welcome and be fed.
Right.
And for things to be perfect. But in the process, sometimes you kind of don't have fun entertaining, which is not the point. You know?
Yeah, I know.
So anyway, I'm working on that for everyone's sake.
Wow.
Did you ever feel like you grew into your dad or
not? Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely a lot. But a lot is different about us too, you know, because we're different generations as well. So
right.
But I think I got smarts from him. I think I got. I look a lot like him too.
Oh, there you go.
So yeah.
Good looks.
Thank you. And and both he and my mom taught me a lot of how to be a good human being, you know, and not by telling me, but by showing me being themselves, you know. So I learned not to lie, not to cheat, not to steal from people, you know, to be kind, to help out, things like that, you know. And I consider that to be considerate of other people. And although some of these things can hinder you in a way, you know, essentially, those are good things. I'm grateful for them. You
those
know?
Are great things.
Yeah, you know.
Those are like the main things.
Right. But at the same time, they're both pessimists, you know, so I've had to overcome that, and it's taken me a long time.
Interesting.
Yeah. They're both very neat, so I become neat, but that's a good thing, although it can be obsessive sometimes.
I have it too. Right? Yeah, I have it too.
So yeah, it's like everything has to be right. But you know what? It's not a bad thing, because then the station always looks great. You know, people come in, it never looks used. You know, they come in, everything is like just the right angle and everything, because that's the way I feel comfortable in my head, you know, when things are organized.
I know. I do too.
Really?
I need it like that. I don't feel like I was like that as a kid, but I've kind of grown into it.
Yeah.
And
that could come from your parents too.
In my room.
Are there any Virgos in your family at all?
Because those are like. Yeah, my mom's a Virgo.
Really? Yeah. There you go. You see, both my parents are Virgos, and they're neat freaks.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
See, I mean, out of 12 signs, I picked the right one
you
for
did.
Your mom. And for your mom, too.
Yeah, and for
there
my mom.
There you go.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Are you a Virgo?
No, but both my parents are. I'm a Taurus, you know. But
what's a Taurus?
Taurus is May.
Oh, May. Oh, yeah, my roommate's a Taurus.
Yeah.
Are you stubborn?
So, yeah. That's what they say about them, right?
Yeah.
But I think everybody's stubborn. But yeah, I am.
How funny.
But I'm also tenacious, you know, I mean, which means you're stubborn in a good way, you know.
Right.
It's like you don't give up. And I don't give up, you know. It's like, and some things I do, you know. It depends. But I guess maybe I don't want them bad enough, like with women and stuff, you know. If I don't get a clear, like, I'm interested, it's like, moving on to the next one, you know. I don't want to deal with the rejection. You were here when we talked about it on Friday, no? Or was it another day? No.
I think it was a different day.
Yeah, if it doesn't sound familiar to you, it wasn't on that day. But it's funny because... who knows how many opportunities I missed out on just because we talked about it yesterday. Okay, like for example, when I was like 15 years old 14 15, I clearly remember this. I was in love with this girl in another high school, and I mean this was middle school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And no, that's high school, right? 15, 16, 17, 18.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, high school. A freshman in high school. I was like in love with her because she was so beautiful, right? And I would see it like her at like sporting events, dances, things mm-hmm. like that, where both schools would like commingle.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't know I existed, or maybe she did, but I never made a move.
Yeah,
I
mean, probably
even
not.
So she never knew even I existed. And I'm thinking to myself, how many times have I made that same mistake in my life that I didn't make it known that I was interested in someone, you know?
Oh.
And then what would happen is many times, I mean, and when I did make the move, I did take the chance, I was totally wrong. They were totally into it, you know? So it's like...
Well, you see?
Yeah, so what's the worst that can happen, you know? But yeah. We were talking about this because I guess to me rejection is pretty a pretty big deal breaker. You know, I mean, it's like I don't want to have to experience it, but all I can tell you is from other parts in my life I know that I'm tenacious as to the point where I will stop at nothing to fix something, to make something work. To get to where I want to get to, you know?
But I think the difference is that in career, no one will ever shame you for being tenacious in your career.
And well, but you know what? What about the rejection of, like, going to auditions and things like that and you get rejected,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, that is humiliating and
right, and that's what I mean. So
but it's
that
not,
takes a lot of courage.
But not in a...
romantic,
personal way.
Yeah, right.
Well, a lot of
that's
people take
true,
it personally, and that's sort of their downfall right. because it feels like
oh,
someone
the rejection.
Is rejecting them. But if you start to sort of understand that it's not a personal, that's what they always, I feel like I always hear, don't take it personally, don't take it personally. You can't take that kind of thing personally. They went with someone else for whatever reason. It's not that they didn't choose you.
Exactly.
Romantically, they are very much not choosing you
so
and your
it's a different
qualities.
Thing altogether. Yeah,
so I think that's a little more dare, you know, you're putting more on the line because you're saying, I want you and then
and exactly.
Then they don't want
and
you
then
back.
They're like, yeah, exactly. But, you know, so all I can say is I've missed out on many opportunities and I know that and all I can say is when the things I regret and many people say this but the things I regret are the things I have not done you know I haven't done things that I regretted you know
mm-hmm.
Other than maybe getting divorced but that's another story altogether no but just because the kids sort of like slipped away but yeah that sucks you know. So I married for the second time without kids. The marriage didn't work again, but no kids this time. And
it was easier this time.
Yeah, you know. But because you sort of like... Let me tell you something about divorce, okay?
You tell me.
And you're lucky because your parents are together, right?
They are, yeah.
Okay, so you're very fortunate, and let me tell you why. Although a lot of people get divorced, and they tell you divorce is good because... Like, not good, but let's say in cases where the kids would suffer more if you stay together than if you guys are separate, you know, then divorce is a good idea. But, and I felt that's where I was, you know, so, and so did my wife at the time, so we split up and we divorced.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very afraid of that because I was afraid to lose my kids.
Mm.
And because the father usually doesn't get the kids, you
right,
know?
Right.
And I really wanted them, but I knew I had no chance. So that whole thing was traumatic for me. I mean, to the point where I went berserk. I was so depressed and everything. I had to move away from the country for a couple of years to recover from having to deal with my kids seeing another man in their house.
In the house.
And they were young. You know, they were young. They were like 4 and 1,
wow.
Right? So you're saying if they're not in my life, then their whole childhood, their whole life is going to be affected by this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So several years later, we actually tried to live together again with the kids.
Wow.
6 years later, we were together for 3 years.
And the new husband and the new guy?
No. The guys were just... the guy was long gone.
Oh, guys were in and out. Okay, great.
Yeah,
great.
That was like six years later.
Okay, great.
6 years later, we got together after we both have worked out our demons or so we thought, and we got back together. So at least the kids got to remember what it was like to be together mm-hmm. as a family for 3 years. But it was a loveless relationship, you know? So, so again, we split up and all that. So the bottom line, what I'm trying to say is, as involved a father as I was, and let me tell you, many years I would go and pick up my kids from school every day. So it's not like I was the dad that takes the kids every other weekend or something. Mm-hmm. I was involved with them every day almost,
yeah,
at least three times a week. I would take each one of them separately, like have a special evening with them, take them out, play the arcades, whatever, mm-hmm. outside, go to a movie, go to the mall, trade Pokemon, you know, these things, you know. And they loved it, you know, so that was cool. And I can show you pictures from all the years that they've been growing up. They clung to me like there was like glue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we were always so close. Now they're my daughter's 26, my son's 23, and they couldn't care less, really. You know, they really couldn't care less. So it's just a question of you become their ATM machine. And they come to you, man, they suddenly your friends every time they need something, a new phone and this, and come on, man, you know, you guys are grown. So, but they don't listen. They don't give a shit about this either, you know. So the love that I have for them, I mean, to me, it's like if you ask me who's the most important person to you in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously my parents, but my kids come before that, you know. I mean, it's your kids, right? And you love them regardless. But what kind of commentary is it when you think, I can't count on them to take care of me when I'm old? I don't count on them to be there mm-hmm. like I am now for my parents, you know, because so... That's a sad shit. I don't mean to bring you down. But
good morning, Ellen.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not always about laughing, folks. We do some thinking here, too.
So what would you say is the reason for the distance? Did something happen or is it just sort of
Let me ask you this. If you... let's ask this in a third person. A person that, let's say the mother, she gets the kids, she's unhappy with the father. Now, we didn't really hate each other, we didn't really fight or anything, but there was just nothing there anymore, you know? So let's say innocently, she started developing an attitude towards me, an idea about who was responsible for the divorce and why and everything. And don't you think if she's raising the kids, it would pass on eventually?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's inevitable.
Yeah.
So then they grow up with one side of the story, and who knows what they think.
Right.
So, and they won't open up. So when we're together, it's the best time. But when you try to talk about serious shit, forget about it. They're out of there in a second. Mm. So that's why. But, okay, so at any rate, for those of you who were thinking of divorce, no, and that's why I brought it up. Because think many times about it, and especially if you're a father, whoever the custodian, the non-custodian parent is, you may lose your kids, you know. And now you understand why I went crazy and had to get away for 2 years.
Yeah.
I lived in Israel for a year and South Africa for a year.
Wow.
Yeah, that was amazing time, but I had to find myself, you know.
Yeah.
I had to figure out how do I deal with not raising my kids.
Yeah.
You know?
It's, God, that's... That is so hard because
right?
It's so unfair for, I mean, well, parents, poor parents. I mean, to have not only the responsibility of young, impressionable kids,
right?
But also they're people. They're full adults with more life to live, and they deserve to be happy and
exactly,
and not, you know, forced into a loveless relationship, and they deserve to be selfish, and then if you choose that route, you know, and decide right. to take care of yourself, sometimes you know your kids can resent you. Then if you choose your kids, you know you've let yourself kind of fall by the wayside. It just, I don't know what the right answer is for that.
Yeah.
That's so hard.
I know. Well, I tell you, you know, when you for 26 years raise your daughter, and then she says to you, "What have you done for me?" That's pretty hurtful, you know, because my question is, what haven't I done for you? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, imagine your parents doing all the stuff for you. I've done all that for them. It doesn't matter that I was not the custodian parent. I've done a lot for them. And still mm-hmm. to this day, I'm paying some of their bills. I try to do things for them, but they are each into their own life and, you know, whatever. So maybe it'll change, but people have been saying that for years and it doesn't. So let's just say their mom did not view me favorably, so they probably don't either. Let's just put it that way.
Maybe there's a way to, if she spoke to them more favorably about you now, that there, you know, then there would be a way to sort of change their minds if she were to say it instead of you.
Yeah, well, it's too late, and I don't see how she would say that anyway. You know, but she promised to when they were kids. But all I can tell you is this, Cameron, is that the pattern here is the same pattern that her mother created when she was a kid. The same thing. You know, bringing...
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Like distancing the father, bringing in a new man into the house. The stepfather becomes closer to the kids.
See, we've come full circle here on becoming your parents.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. That's so interesting.
Right?
Because that could be how she, not consciously, but subconsciously... thinks you raise a family, or, you know,
exactly.
thinks a family is brought together.
Right. But let me ask you this. Okay, so if she indeed was the one influencing and doing all the influencing and stuff, obviously the kids are, she needs to take credit for the kids, right? For the way they turned out.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I can't, because I don't feel they're my kids. My kids, I would give them different values. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Their character would be different if they ever listened to me or lived with me to the point where they knew how to treat other people. Mm. And I don't think they do. So, at any rate, let's get to some happier things, folks. Okay, Cameron? I mean, look, that's what the show's about. Sometimes you just like... you just have fun, and sometimes you analyze people to death. And I figured, you know what? Rather than analyzing you and having your mom...
You in the hot seat.
Yeah, and then your mom would be, like, complaining on Facebook and stuff. I'd rather tell my own stories, because I reveal everything to the world.
My mom's very active on Facebook, so you don't want to be on her bad side.
Well, maybe she should call in, Mom. You know what?
Yeah, Mom, look, if
the
you're
number here. Let me give you the number if you're listening. It's right on the website too. 323-203-0815. If the phone rings, I'll know it's your mom.
Yeah,
we'll get her on the line, and then we'll see what's
our
going
listening.
On.
Yeah, then we'll see. Mom, take note.
Yeah. So wishing everybody good marriages, good relationships, good childhoods. I mean, because childhood is what defines you, you know?
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, it all goes back to when you were a kid.
It does. Gosh, that's so relevant in my life right now. I'm taking this acting class, and my teacher recommended this book called The Drama of...
The Gifted Child?
The Drama of the Gifted Child, yeah.
Yeah, I've read it.
Yes, I'm reading it. Wow. I just started it now. And basically, the reason she's having us read it for acting purposes is to gain sort of an understanding of your five-year-old self, right? So
right.
In acting, you sort of have to undo the barriers you've put up as an adult in order to live comfortably and be polite to people and have manners and, you know, and survive. But to go back to your five-year-old self and your instincts and your whatever it is that's just you, without any societal, you know, anything put on, to go back to that and know sincerely who you are and who you were at that point is right. So important.
Yeah.
I haven't gone very far in the book.
I know, it's a difficult book, let me tell you. And I read a lot of books. That one is kind of a boring book, but... But you can find but you can no, I mean, look, maybe at the time I was just too down when I was reading this to really get into it, but
yeah.
It is a recommended book. I think it's sort of a classic, you know, for narcissistic behavior, whatever, you know. It talks about that, you know. So, but at any rate, you know, so maybe it's more relevant than ever, because I think thanks to social networks, we're really, you know, I mean, we're just like, we want to be celebrities, you know. Everybody wants to be celebrity. Mm-hmm. And it's all amplified and everything. So, I don't know. I forget what I wanted to say anyway.
Well, that was a good point on its own.
I guess, whatever. Sometimes that happens to me, because if I can tell you how many things are going on through my mind, like thinking of all the articles I have open here, all the things I want to talk about, the fact that we only have 10 minutes left.
Oh, no.
The fact that I wish your mom would call in. Gosh, mom, call in 323-203-0815.
I wonder if she's listening. But that brings up a really good point, because my boyfriend sent me this article that was really, really well written the other day about how my generation, we are so financially dependent on our parents, as your kids are and as I am. And that we, that my generation, because of social media and because of just sort of our upbringing and sort of even our how entitled my generation feels and how your generation has given us just about everything and sort of what we continue to expect, that we won't really feel like adults until closer to our 40s. And that soon,
that's true.
And that soon the number 18, like turning 18, it, which is already to me seems dated to be an adult, because it just doesn't feel like that. And I know a lot of millennials at my age, at, you know, in their 20s, not knowing what the heck we're doing and still living at home and still being very financially dependent and emotionally dependent. And and so this age 18 that used to be sort of when you would reach adulthood is very much not that anymore. And that, you know, and
that makes a lot of sense, because that's when people used to die younger too. You
right.
know?
So, I think that number kind of doesn't really equate anymore, because I mean, if we're not going to be financially dependent till our 30s and then actually independent from our parents till, you know, I don't. As much as I'm proud of myself and what I've been able to do, I don't feel, I feel like an adult, but I don't feel like a self-sustained, like I know that what I'm doing
self-sufficient.
Is self-sufficient.
Okay, so, but look, you're young, right?
I
mean,
the
thing is this, is that many people in your age have not moved out yet. From what I understand, you moved out, and but you're living with a roommate, right?
Yes.
So the thing is that you probably want your own place, your own space. And that would be the next step, you know, and that's how you move on.
Yeah.
And that's how you move up and stuff. But many people have not even taken that step to be with a roommate, or they have five roommates because they can't afford to pay, you know.
Right, right.
So, I mean, you obviously have made a step to, you know, several steps in the right direction. So give yourself a break, you know. I mean, you are doing what it takes, you know. And I see, and you're working and you're eager to work and, you know, I mean, what else can you ask for? And, you know, and so your parents must be very proud, and you must be very proud of yourself. Because you're already accomplished, and you're just 24, right?
23.
23?
Yeah.
Oh, why did somebody say, no, okay,
well, 23. I turned 24 very soon. My birthday is in April, so.
Oh, well, 24 it is.
24 it is.
I wasn't that far off. That's funny. But no, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, and I told you, I think you're an old soul, you know, because you're able to carry a conversation, you know, more than a 23-year-old would, you know, in a much more interesting way. So there you go. But I think that also says a lot about your generation, that you guys are much more mature, smarter than ever, you know. So I don't think it's about I don't think it's about mental abilities as far as the generation. Like, I don't think it's mentally I think this generation is superior to mine, you know, because we had to learn technology. You guys were born with it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you have to be a lot smarter, but the question is, are you smarter about life, you know? And the thing is, I know that I have shielded my children, and so have all my friends, to the point where this is the result now. They can't really deal with real life, you know, and you have to support them at 26, 27.
Yeah. And that's the other thing as a parent. How do you juggle, you know, being as supportive as you possibly can and then letting your kids go when they need to go?
Yeah.
I know.
All right. Well, enough with the kids already. How do we go back into that again?
I don't know.
All right. Well, Apple unveils a special edition iPhone in red. Did you hear about that
one? I heard about that, yeah.
And that's because I guess they're marking their association with red. an organization that helps fight AIDS. So we've heard about all those red campaigns and stuff before.
Yeah.
So this is cool. It's a nice red, but I'm not impressed because look at my case here.
Oh, I have a case. Had it going.
No, yeah, I had a case. I've got a case that's just about as red as the iPhone I'm seeing in the picture here. Right? And it looks like a real iPhone without a case.
So this is fake news to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Irrelevant.
I don't really care about a real iPhone.
You've already been supporting AIDS for much longer than Apple.
Yeah, the fight against it. But
or the fight against AIDS.
Yeah. You know what's amazing? Apple still sell so many iPhones. I mean, they sold almost 80 million in its most recent quarter. That's in about 3 months. 80 million iPhones. Think about it.
Wow.
Multiply that by how much money do they make on each one? I don't know, 300, 500?
I know. That's crazy.
Right?
I don't know anyone who doesn't have an iPhone. I don't know a single person.
Really?
I don't think.
Well, I do because I run into a lot of people here, and I don't understand the need for Android, you know, because. But people do it, and because it's people that don't want to be confined to one ecosystem, you know?
Because
think about it. It's just like in Amazon, you know? Amazon, you can buy anything, you can watch anything, you can listen to anything, you can read anything, you know? So when you get like an Amazon Kindle Fire or something, you have all that content in that little world. So the same with Apple, you know. But if you want something like... So the same with a Mac also. A Mac is everything that Apple envisions. But
right,
a PC or an Android, is something that everybody else envisions. So there's a lot more to find there, you know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's a lot more apps. There's more people using Android around the world, you know.
Really?
So, oh, yeah. It's only here that the iPhone is big.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah, because think about it. Apple is one company that makes one phone, and then you have Samsung making a million phones, LG, you know, all the other companies that make them, HTC, whatever. They all make these phones, and they're all Androids and stuff, you know. So they all take, like, big market shares.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it... In the world, I know that when I went to, most recently I was in Israel, I guess, many people do have an Android there, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so, because they're cheaper too, so go figure.
The more you know.
Yeah. Okay, folks, well, we're just about out of time. Cameron Kelly, thank you so much. How can people find you if they want to contact you?
Oh, yeah. You can follow me on Instagram. My handle is Camera Kelly. Or on Twitter, I am Cameron Nicole K. You can visit my website, CameronNicoleKelly.com, or just find me on IMDb or Facebook, anywhere.
There you go. You see, if you want to find everything, go to your website, right?
Mm-hmm.
CameronNicoleKelly.com. That's why I always say, why do we need to give all our handles? You just go to the website. There's everything
there,
right? I
guess so. Yeah, just go
but
to the website.
But websites are so yesterday, you know,
they
for
are
people,
a little
right?
Bit. They are a little bit.
Right.
I think it's the last thing we remember to update.
Right.
Everybody thinks of their Instagram and their Facebook, I think, more.
They
more
do.
So.
They do. Because
oh,
when
Snapchat,
you go to a website, you feel like, you know. Because I think on social media, people feel they're connected with you, whereas on the website, you just sort of consume it.
Right.
Yeah.
And on social media, it's real time. You know, you see when I posted it. I could have posted it 5 minutes ago. You know, I'm online and I just did this. And on my website, it could be not updated. It could be something that I just have automated. You know, it's more personal on social media.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, so thank you so much for joining me. You're always welcome back anytime.
You.
You're obviously now not just a friend of the show, but a verified friend of the show.
A verified friend.
So there you go.
That was my goal. I said I'd come back. I didn't know it'd be this soon.
I know. But we needed a guest co-host today, and you were so gracious to come in and be available last minute. So thank you so much for joining.
Of course. Oh, my gosh. It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.